You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
On this episode of Cheesehead Radio,
the Packers get the win over the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers.
And Tucker Kraft has officially entered the Pro Bowl tight end chat.
We prep you for the Panthers and give you our hot pockets.
All that and more, right here on
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. It's time for more Packers news, fun, and frivolity here on Cheesehead Radio. Now in our 17th year, talking about our incredibly unhealthy obsession with the Green Bay Packers football team. As usual, our distinguished hosts tonight are CeeDee Angeli of Packers Talk, known as TundraVision on social media, Kelly Hodgson of Cheesehead Radio, known as That Packer Girl on social media, and little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can find me at Jersey Al GBP. This show and all Packers Talk podcasts are sponsored by Wisconsin's own Ticket King. For over 30 years, Ticket King has been providing Packers tickets to fans across the globe. You can find them at theticketking.com or right across the street from Lambeau Field. For direct links to Packers tickets, check packerstalk.com/tickets. Remember to support local Wisconsin businesses, not the national behemoth. That's it for the preliminaries. Let's get this show on the road.
All right. Welcome to this week's Cheesehead Radio. Nice to see you guys. It's always nice to meet after a pretty impressive Packers win rather than a loss, wouldn't you say?
An impressive Packers half after.
Yeah. Game.
Yes.
I'll take it. You know, we're getting consistent half by half. And, you know, if you're going to be more consistent the second half, I'm better than I'll take it.
Usually, yeah.
Yes. So the Packers with a 10-point victory over the Steelers wouldn't have predicted it at halftime, but Packers 35-25, and as much as was made ado, justifiably so, about this being the quote-unquote Jordan Love versus Aaron Rodgers game, this game may go down in history as being the day Mr. Tucker Kraft entered the chat. I mean, there was so much ado about it being National Tight Ends Day, and all the graphics we saw was like five or six tight ends of other people across the league. We're like, where's Tucker Kraft?
Not Tucker Kraft.
I don't think after that game anyone
That'll happen again.
overlooking one Tucker Kraft. What a game from him.
But that's what he does when they need to get a spark going. It's usually some phenomenal pass with a gazillion yards after the catch because Love counts on him.
It seems like every week LaFleur in one of his presses says, we have to find a way to get the ball to Tucker Kraft more. We have to find a way to get, well, I guess they finally found a way. Thank you. It took this long, but thank you.
And Jersey Al, I'm going to give you credit because a few weeks ago we said, okay, if there's one way we're going to fix the Packers, and we're all coming to these, and you just said, when we're in the red zone, throw it to Tucker Kraft.
He's a touchdown machine in there. There's just no stopping him.
It's impossible to bring him down. The guy's a bulldozer.
Yeah. When he gets ahead of steam from like the 10, 15-yard line, his momentum, like his body is so tilted forward, there's no pushing him back, and he just runs through players. Now, he had some nice blocks on the one touchdown from Malik Heath and Christian Watson, which created a lane for him to run through. But then, you know, there were a couple of attempted tackles by some defensive backs, and I got to say, they look kind of feeble trying, yeah.
I think the most impressive stat he has is, you know, he had 143 yards in the, you know, reception yards, but 132 of those were after the catch.
Yak machine. Yak crack. What's it? The yak mac and cheese or whatever?
Yakety yak.
Don't talk back.
So really, really exciting to see that. And as Jersey Al just mentioned, we weren't sure. As we talked last week on Thursday night, we said, maybe Christian Watson will be activated. But, you know, we're all pretty hesitant. Kelly with her usual bubbly optimism. Well, he'll be on a pitch count. And we're kind of like, they're not going to act. They're going to wait another week. All of a sudden, boom, Sunday, he's activated. It's like, really? Well, they're going to put him a pitch. I don't know if he was on any pitch count.
Well,
because the dude had four catches for 85 yards, and he looked great.
Two things. First of all, you have misrepresented what I said.
Not the first time.
Because I did say he will play, and your reaction was, oh, really? So let's move on from that.
I think he misrepresented how I reacted, though.
No, absolutely not, because I can see you now. So I know exactly how you reacted. And the second thing is, he did play more than was expected, even to the Packers. However, I rewatched the game, and I watched every one of his snaps. Okay, and LaFleur actually mentioned this in one of his pressers as well. Yes, he played 36 snaps or whatever, but a lot of times he was on one side of the field. The play was all the way on the other side of the field, and really he had nothing to do. So they weren't hard physical. They weren't all hard physical snaps, okay? I'd say maybe half of them were where he was really involved doing something, either running routes, blocking, catching passes, something like that. So take that with a little grain of salt, the 36 snaps.
But after this game, though, even if he's far from the other side of the field, they're going to have to cover him because he was impactful game one. His hands are not rusty. I thought he'd be kind of inconsequential even if he played. And
inconsequential?
Because he was hurt, and I didn't think they were going to ease him in. And then there was that thread the needle, pull it out of your rear play, which would have been horrible if it didn't go well. But
which one are you referring to?
Middle into double coverage, and Love threaded the needle. That one pass, like, holy cow, he caught it.
On the 5-yard line when he caught it? Okay, that one.
I don't think that was a thread the needle.
No, it wasn't a thread the needle. Yeah.
that was a moonshot that kind of came down and hit him.
That was the most Brett Favre throw of Jordan Love's career so far.
Running
to the right, jumping in the air and heaving it sideways across to the other side of the field,
pulling it out of his rear, and it looked brilliant.
The ball tipping up and down, no perfect spiral all the way. And,
pure Brett Favre. It was. Absolutely. And we loved it.
But I will say, I was not a believer. I really felt that this miracle healing that he went through, and of course, you know, I'm always going to be cautious with this and say, you know what? He's got a long career. Do not rush him back. Do not push him back. Let's wait till November. Let's wait till December. I mean, wow, did he prove me wrong? I mean, he looked like himself out there. Even for the limited time we saw him, he was impactful. That is a miracle medical recovery, I think, by most medical standards.
I think it's up there with the Adrian Peterson recovery. You know, we're about 2 months ahead of schedule, you know, 2-3 months ahead of schedule, and it doesn't even look like he dropped off at all in talent. He's got great hands. He had great speed. He knows his routes.
Yeah. And it's Tucker Kraft and Christian Watson. You could see them tip the field. And what that does for you is it allows a young man by the name of Jordan Love, who may or may not have been going against his former teammate and sort of rival and the person whose shadow he's trying to get out of.
And mentor.
And the dude had a career game, absolutely a career game, wonderful game by Jordan Love. How impressed are you guys with this kid?
He didn't crumple with pressure playing the old Jedi Master, so to speak. Yeah, he came to play. He impressed. He stayed calm when things weren't going well. He's had no interceptions, so I think that's remarkable, which tells me he's calm. And he trusted the process, so he was rewarded mightily.
Yeah, and the best thing is he's owning the fourth quarters, right?
Yes.
He's owning the fourth quarters. I mean, Dallas, he led the team on like five straight scoring drives. This game, he led the team on five straight scoring drives. Arizona Cardinals, they came back from being down to go ahead and win the game. So that's the impressive thing about what he's done. To me, the most impressive.
When the Packers fell behind, you know, at the end of the first half, they're down 16-7. And we talked about this before, allowing Jordan Love to just kind of open things up. You saw that offense in the first half. The running game wasn't getting going. They'd hand it off to Jacobs. They'd get 2 yards. And then Love was really doing a lot of those dink and dunk passes, right? Little pass over there, gain 4 yards. Little pass over there, 5 yards. All of a sudden, we miss a pass. and it's 3rd and 5 and we're punting. And that's kind of the way the first half went. Second half, Jordan Love came out and he took the lid off, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that every pass he was throwing was one of those big loopers downfield, although there was more than enough of those sometimes to make me uncomfortable. It's like, oh my God. But he was whipping the ball and getting out 20 straight completions, which is just incredible. So I think you see when Love takes the lid off, when LaFleur allows him to take the lid off, whoever's responsible for that, Love delivers. It was pretty awesome.
Well, if you look at first half, second down was incredibly predictable. It's like, hey, let's run 2nd and long. And everybody knew, and every single drive, it was 2nd and long. Let's run it up the middle. He got a little more creative with his play calling second half. Or like you said, Love went to, on his own. But well, it was a tale of two games.
It really started the Packers' last possession of the first half when they had 34 seconds. And Love got them into field goal position. That's when he just started completing pass after pass after pass and got them down there. And, of course, the field goal got missed. But that's where it started. And I think that probably had an effect, going into the halftime. You say, well, look at what we just did in only 30 seconds. We marched down into field goal position. Maybe we should do more of this. I hope that's what happened. I hope that they saw that and that's what changed. But who knows?
I don't know why you have to keep learning the lesson every week, though.
Yeah, well,
it's like,
I know that's a whole different show.
Learning curve is a little flat. Defense did really well in the game. They held them quite a bit through a lot of the first half.
Held them to field goals, which is key. Yeah,
really, really was. Micah Parsons had an impact. Edger and Cooper, we forced a few turnovers, which, if you remember, Jerziel, that was my thing. How do the Packers break out of this?
Forced the fumble,
Finally got that. Yeah, you'd love to get 3-4 turnovers a game, but at this point, just getting
one. Take it
at this point. I mean, what do they say? We're 31st in the league in forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
Jets.
It's a start. It's a start. Yeah.
So good. Rodgers had a good game, but we kept him out of the end zone. Rodgers actually had to use a silent count.
Which was great.
Packer fans were out there. It was a rough game. I mean, yeah. I don't think I had seen.
Well, most Steeler games are like that. That's how they play. They play physical. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not very mentally sound, though, to be constantly getting into a lot of those.
Well, that's a different topic.
Right. But there was a lot of scrums. There was a lot of fights, and it always seemed like the Steelers who were getting the penalties for it, which made me happy.
Kudos to Quay Walker for not retaliating, right? When he got a finger in his eye and a hand on his face mask.
Come on, that's DK Metcalf playing and dirty as always.
Yeah, but that was Quay Walker, the guy who twice before has had problems with reacting to things.
And ejected from games. Yeah.
Right, and ejections. So.
And you heard his quote of like, I need to walk away or I'm going to get in trouble or something along those lines.
Kudos to him for having overcome that early issue in his career.
So let's talk a little bit. There weren't a ton of concerns out of this game, but Brandon McManus.
Special teams.
We got this kid coming in here. I can't remember what his name is. He's got a cool last name.
Lucas.
Exactly.
Haversick, I think. Something like that.
I don't care what his name is because it's not McManus.
All we know is he's 5 for 5.
Yes, and he kicked a 61-yard field goal last week. Like,
franchise record.
Okay.
Well, now you have McManus, who was 0 for 2. Oh, my word.
Ooh, kicker controversy.
Yeah, and I don't mind if a kicker misses a 57-yard, which I think was, I don't know if that was the one.
It was 57 or 58. It was long.
Yeah. 57 it was,
The 44, was the 44 and the one right at the end of the half?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you don't miss those when you had such big disasters before your quad injury. That's with air quotes. And then you come in and you miss two of them. LaFleur seemed to be trying to sort of shake it off, said it wasn't because of the injury, but he says, well, sometimes kickers miss kicks.
They do.
And sometimes kickers get cut. I don't know.
I'm surprised he's still on the roster, honestly.
No.
Well, no. I don't know about that. But
not how the Packers do things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember when jersey I was complaining about Mason Crosby for like three straight years. It thrust me.
That never happened.
And then trash talked him to his mom or something.
I'm misrepresenting again. Anyway, so let's finish up this first quarter. It's a great game. Statement road win. We're seeing the Packers now sitting atop not only the NFC North, they still have the quote unquote first seed in the playoffs if the season were to end now.
Hush, do not mention that.
Which is great.
Doesn't mean anything this early on.
And the Steelers are not a bad team. They're not elite.
They're not the Jets.
Hold it together, and they didn't play down to their competition. They won by 10 points. I think there's a lot we can be happy and proud of.
In the end, yes.
Yes. So, excellent. That is the end of the first quarter. We're going to call that a win. Let's move it on to the second. So, we're going into Panthers week. There's a little bit of conversation we can have. Of course, you cannot go anywhere right now without seeing someone on the Twitter proposing the latest trade. The trade deadline is 3 o'clock next Tuesday. Given they've already done probably literally the trade of the decade, possibly this millennium, it's not likely they're going to trade away anything. There's a lot of speculation. Anything you guys are buying into or believing?
You know, there's the possibility, and then there are the brain trusts on social media like, hey, we'll get rid of Romeo Doubs and get something. No, he's our number one receiver. They're not getting rid of Romeo Doubs.
Yeah. Doubs has been talked about, yeah.
That ship has sailed,
hopefully. You know, people don't appreciate, you know, guys like that because he's not flashy.
But he's a workhorse, so I'll keep him.
Yeah, although he did have a couple of drops this game, which, you know, that happens.
But it's not consistent. He still had catches first down with the big pose that made Packers social media when it counted. He can't have a hat. He can't have a hat. Well, there was that one picture of him posing after the first down catch, and it was like it made Packers Instagram for the victory picture.
Okay.
Couple names that get bandied about, not by anyone with any credibility. Sean Ryan, which seems rather silly.
No.
Not considering he just played the entire game, almost the entire game at right guard.
And really might be our most solid run blocker at this point, which is not great. Kingsley Engebari.
Zero chance of that.
Zero chance. Absolutely none.
Luke Musgrave gets tossed, bandied about a little bit.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, you're right.
But what do you mean? Now that we only have nothing.
Now that we only have three tight ends, we're going to trade another one. Okay.
Sure. And then, of course, Doubs is the other one. I think it's funny because there's so many huge names out there that people love to throw out there. Like, look at this cornerback. Look at this cornerback. It's like, we're probably not going to get him for Romeo Doubs or for Luke Musgrave.
But then people will complain, despite winning the trade lottery this year, that we didn't do anything by next week, which is ridiculous.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, what are the chances that the Packers pull off any deal before the trade deadline?
The only thing I could see would be maybe getting some a depth piece for a draft, you know, for like a 2027 sixth round draft pick or something like that. You know, nothing, not really giving up anything significant. Just get another body in there, especially since Michael Robinson just got claimed off of the practice squad.
That was rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So now they're short a person depth-wise at that position, which isn't that really strong to begin with. So that I could see something like that. Or if there's somebody, I don't follow the other teams like I follow the Packers. If there's some guy that gets released this weekend, some cornerback that they feel might be able to help in a pinch, I could see them doing that, picking somebody up on waivers. But so to answer your original question, what are the odds? I'll give it a 3 out of 10.
I give it a 0 out of 10.
Well. Yeah.
Something major, but I can see them doing a piece, you know. Something that's not going to be major. Something going like, that was your trade, Goody? Yeah, that's pretty typical for Packers fans. Speaking of, go ahead.
Oh, and then there's the drama that's trying to be generated on social media that Matthew Gold deactivated his Instagram account, which I don't think is consequential to anything other than he probably want to step away from social media.
Correct. So Speaking of cornerbacks, as we just spoke about Jersey. Now, it's funny, we had this conversation, I think, a few weeks back where I kind of brought up, you know, I'm a little concerned about the corners. He says, I don't see any issues with the cornerbacks. And I believed you at the time. And it's like, however, ever since then, ever since that moment.
Well, here's the problem.
It's been some issues.
They brought Hobbs back, and he's been terrible. He came back from the injury, and everything went downhill from there. So the guy I've wanted to be in there from the beginning, Carrington Valentine, got his chance this game, and I got to say, much improved over Nate Hobbs.
Which is sad, because $48 million thrown at Nate Hobbs for Carrington Valentine.
We can't worry about the money. We can't worry.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm saying Carrington Valentine, I'm trying to remember, was he a sixth-round draft pick? Something like
that. He was a bargain basement, yes.
I think he was seventh, actually.
Seventh, yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, locked down, certainly one of the better wide receivers in the league. Fantastic. Keyshawn Nixon had a very, very good start, as you said, to this year. Couple penalties, which, you know, what do you do? I remember watching the game and thinking, you know, Aaron Rodgers still has that ability to work with receivers and how he throws the ball. He's very good at drawing those interference calls. We saw it for years at Jordy Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame him completely, but still, Halfley is still defending at the group, but they're number one in the NFL in yards per pass play allowed. That's rough.
Number one as in the best?
So.
Or number one as in the worst?
It's a great question. I actually should have to look that up. I probably shouldn't throw that stat out without.
Well, the answer is yes.
I'm just saying, you know, you could look at it either way.
It's true. So
I think because they don't give up explosive plays,
mm-hmm.
I think that stat might be different than what you thought it was.
Could be.
Just a guess, because I don't know the stat, but.
I like that Valentine had a good game. Not only did he lock down.
Man, the guy competes, okay? He just he doesn't care about being overmatched, doesn't care if he's going up against a star receiver. He's just going to compete on every play.
He got in Metcalf's head, too.
You can't ask for more than that, right?
He works hard.
He's not playing 5 yards off and letting guys make easy receptions. He's trying to contest every catch.
As long as he stops writing checks, his mouth writing checks that is he cannot cash, because he gets himself into talking smack.
He is a character, isn't he?
Absolutely.
I swear, half the fights that happened since Quay Walker was involved, like, where is Valentine? Because I know he's involved in this talking smack with Metcalf.
Yeah.
So speaking of areas that struggle a little bit, Josh Jacobs, who's been really, really good for us for the last year and six games, had probably his first game where he really, really kind of struggled to get a lot generated on the ground, especially in the middle of the field. Obviously, he came alive a little bit as we get into the red zone, as he always does. But even though the Packers got back Aaron Banks and Anthony Belton, still ranking 29th in run block win rate, even LaFleur out there saying, some of it's good, not so good. Sean Ryan, as you said, Jersey Al, may also be kind of like our Carrington Valentine on the offensive line, stepping in and actually quietly becoming maybe their best run blocker that they have. You sure saw Wilson step in and create a different vibe when he got the ball in the second half in particular, really generated some yards, different runner than Jacobs. I don't know if that was because the defense played him differently, weren't watching for him in the same way that they maybe were trying to key in on Jacobs to make sure he was stopped, but he really got some critical yards that I think opened up the pass play for Jordan Love.
By the way, just for the sake of accuracy for our thousands of listeners, the stat we were talking about, that said number one NFL yards per pass play allowed, the actual stat is they're number one in the NFL in overall yards per play allowed, not just passing, like combined passing and rushing. So they are number one, but in an overall yards per play allowed, which 4.9 yards. As far as just passing, they're somewhere in the middle, like somewhere
at about 15th.
Around 15th or so, right, exactly. Just to clarify that one.
Thank you. Nope. Sometimes those stats get in there. So I think we'll just kind of finish up here a little bit. Interesting conversation between Aaron Rodgers and Micah Parsons. Rodgers suggesting that Micah Parsons buy his old house in Green Bay.
Well, you think of that. This is his second house that he had in Green Bay. And I remember when he bought it, it made a lot of built it, made a lot of news. It's like a monster house. There's going to be a very limited market of who's going to buy that house. And you usually,
well, your Michael employee... Parsons would be a good prospect.
Exactly.
I'm not buying it.
He's got the money.
Because so usually we're getting 1265 Lombardi to afford that one.
Rodgers was pretty smart to hit him up with that.
Well, considering, didn't they bring him in? He was staying at, or is still staying at an Airbnb right now.
I don't know. I have no idea on that. But
hey, it takes some cojones in the middle of the game. Hey, you want to buy my house?
Right? In the middle of competing in a football game.
But in a little bit of news related to Micah Parsons, Gutekunst and the gang looking a little smart with the structure of Micah Parsons' contract now that Aiden Hutchinson of the Lions, who signed a 4-year, $180 million deal. I remember Micah Parsons is 186, but Hutchinson's is higher in guarantees, $141 million. They still have more flexibility with Parsons. They can still do that exit after 3 years, which I think all of us kind of expect is going to happen anyway, just because of the structure of the contract. This is giving them room to pay some of their critical defensive free agents, such as Quay Walker, Rashawn Gary. But it's interesting to see that maybe as people were complaining about the Micah Parsons deal, Lions turn around and really take Aiden Hutchinson to a deal that's going to be locked and loaded and taking up some good cap space for some time.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yes. Hey, the Packers front office is good at playing Moneyball, so.
Definitely. So we're going to end off the second quarter here. Just a little salute to our friend Darren Kennard, offensive lineman, who is the Salute to Service nominee, as November will be the Salute to Service month. So congratulations to him. We're going to see a lot of that coming up this month. And playoff odds. Packers now at 93.5%.
Never tell me the odds.
Mm-hmm. Never tell me the odds.
Again, it is week 8. You cannot base anything on week 8.
Well, we said that in week 4. Now it's week 8. Now we can start talking. Also, Amen. We're doing well, so it's much more fun to predict it now. So that'll take us to the end of the second quarter. We're going to call this another win. And fantastic 2-0 going into the locker room. We'll be back on the other side. Enjoy this message from Ticket King.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your guaranteed authentic tickets from theticketking.com, a longtime trusted source and local Green Bay business. Just go to packerstalk.com/tickets for more information and ticket links. That's packerstalk.com/tickets.
All right, we're back on Cheesehead Radio. CD Angeli, Tundervision with you here. Split out on each side with Jersey Al GBP and Kelly Hodgson, that Packer girl. We are going into the third quarter. We're getting ready for this Sunday's beautiful fall matchup against the Panthers, and wouldn't be complete if we didn't have some injuries to talk about. Kelly,
okay.
Take away.
So you've got Josh Jacobs still with a calf injury, not surprising. It was limited today, Wednesday. LaFleur said he came out of playing the Pittsburgh game fine, but they're still going to manage reps, so they don't want to stress this calf. He's trending, obviously, to play, and I don't see him being limited in any capacity if he's good to go on Sunday. You'll still see Emmanuel Wilson, and I suspect you'll see him in the third quarter, kind of like we did last time, to give Jacobs a bit of a rest. Christian Watson, he was limited Wednesday. He played 36 snaps in Pittsburgh and looked super. He obviously is going to play. Again, we're going to talk about his snap count, but I suspect he'll play more. Dontavian Wicks did not practice today. He, too, has a calf injury and he sat last week. They seem more cautious with his calf injury than they do with Jacobs. I think he's leaning more towards out unless you see him practicing by Friday. Zach Tom, it's no longer an abdominal injury. It's a back injury. He was limited today. Returned to finish the game after everyone collectively held their breath and he went out. As you guys know, he is really critical to pass protection, though Sean Ryan is better with the rush. I expect him to play, but I might see the two swap back and forth.
He did a hell of a job going up against T.J. Watt the entire game.
T.J. Watt was a non-entity, fabulous.
Yeah, he had one or two pressures, you know, but no sacks, and it did not blow up the game, which is something that he does to a lot of other teams and to other offensive tackles. So kudos, Zach Tom.
Mm-hmm. Then we have edge rusher Lucas Van Ness out with a foot injury. He did not participate today. He's labeled day-to-day. He has missed two straight games. He truly is questionable. If he doesn't show up in practice by the end of the week, I suspect he'll be out again. You have linebacker and special teams player Nick Niemann with a pec injury. He did not participate. The team is quoted as being concerned. Pec injuries, as you know, if you tear your pec, that's the ability to push off with your arms. This could be season-ending. This happened to J.J. Watt several years ago. It was one of his season-ending injuries. I suspect he's very unlikely to play. Then you have Brandon McManus with his kicking leg quad injury. He was limited today. He kicked in practice, but still not 100%. We talked about it earlier. He's already missed. He missed his two field goal attempts this past week. The substitute teacher that his name I cannot pronounce remains on the 53. So I suspect McManus, if he's feeling okay, will be able to kick, but it could be a game day decision. And then you have running back Marshawn Lloyd with his hamstring injury. He is still on injured reserve.
He is in nowhere land.
It's LaFleur saying.
We have no idea what that
wouldn't count on him returning anytime soon. So he is down for the count.
I mean, I don't know that I can remember somebody who's been more snake bit than him.
Yeah.
Injury wise. Especially at the very start of the career.
Yeah, they're starting to become like conspiracy theories, like what's going on with this guy, because it just doesn't make sense. But yeah. Poor guy, you know.
So if you look at just kind of quickly glancing at the Panthers, you have Bryce Young, their quarterback, with an ankle injury after missing last. He's full participation after missing last week. He's going to play. Andy Dalton with a right thumb did not participate. His backup status at 112 years old is in doubt. They talk about emergency options, including Mike White, Hendon Hooker. But it's really no big deal if Young's actually going to play, and it looks like he's going to. You got a bunch of mismatch of Achilles injuries, knee injuries. However,
all the offensive line,
line. However, if they stay down, former Packer Josh Scheinman might actually get called up, which could be interesting.
That's what he's doing these days.
Hey, apparently he's on the
Panthers. Backup for the Panthers. Interesting.
Yeah. Safety, Nick Scott is out with an illness. It seems like influenza is starting to hit the country. I wonder if that's what it is. Linebacker Trevin Wallace had a shoulder injury. Offensive linebacker Princely, I'm not even going to try to say his last name. All did not participate.
Umami Ellen.
Thank you. So they're kind of short with linebackers and secondary, and if they all don't play, Packers can really exploit that. So that's kind of the highlights, lowlights of their injury. So it looks, you know, their line and their secondary can be hurting.
Okay.
So the Packers, thank you, by the way, for that, Kelly. Packers are going to be playing a noon game in November. It's beautiful.
Partly cloudy, high of like 51. It's going to be perfect.
This is like ideal Green Bay Packer weather. Like whenever you see those NFL films pictures of Lambeau Field with all the leaves going on the ground, right? This is the game.
This is it.
The game. Real interesting, you know, we'll just hit a couple points. Bryce Young, assuming that he's playing, you know, this is a first overall draft pick, if I'm correct, from 2023. This is the guy who was supposed to be knighted and the best thing ever. And of course, in 2023, no one was talking about Jordan Love as anything except a draft bust. Interestingly enough, Bryce Young, I want to say his career passer efficiency rating is somewhere in the 70s.
It was pretty funny listening to Matt LaFleur when asked about him, trying to like talk him up like he's really, really good. Like, He did his best, but I don't think anybody was buying it.
Well, he was great, but he wasn't absolutely lights out like Tua or Jalen Hurts at Alabama. They still relied heavily on a running game there.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about like in the NFL, like now.
Yeah, he really hasn't risen to the occasion. And that, if I remember correctly, that was not a very strong quarterback class either. I thought he went first as the quarterbacks.
So, you know, Bryce Young did not play last week. They got absolutely slaughtered by the Bills. So clearly Bryce is a better option than Andy Dalton. Will be interesting to watch, but it is neat to see the NFL and to be honest with you, some Packers fans having to look at it and admit like, you know what, maybe this Jordan Love guy isn't doing well. So it's a neat thing. It's almost that Alex Smith thing, right? Alex Smith versus Aaron Rodgers for years. And everyone's like, oh, Alex Smith, look, Aaron Rodgers isn't even starting. And 5 years later, who was anyone going to pick? Aaron Rodgers. So it's history kind of repeating itself in some ways. The Panthers obviously relying a lot on some young players. Tetuaroa McMillan is the go-to receiver. He's a rookie, 37 receptions and already halfway to 1,000 yards on the season. And Rico Dowdle is the running back. He's averaging 5.7 yards per carry. Wow. And it's 200-yard games.
Rico Dowdle, that's not a name that rings any bells.
It is not.
No.
So, you know, here's reality, guys. They're 4-4. They got, you know, the one game that Young didn't play, they got crushed, but that means they're 4-3 otherwise. So, you know, I'm not saying there's a chance, but, you know, they're going to have the ability to possibly, you know, do something, especially they got some good offensive players there. So good for them. Probably the most exciting thing for all of us is we're talking about this beautiful November fall, picture-perfect nostalgia is we have the 1923 throwback uniforms. This coming after we just made fun of the Steelers last week for their ridiculous Bumblebee
uniforms.
Theirs
was awful. I like the Bumblebees from 94. I do not like the Bumblebee yesterday or this weekend.
Which, you know, I will say this about the Bumblebees. You look at Aaron Rodgers, and he's got this, you know, the stripes are perfect, and they go right down to about his belly button, right? And then you realize they fit every single player on the roster with the exact same design. So they're
not flattering for somebody.
370-pound defensive lineman who basically doesn't have those stripes go down past, like, his pecs. And I'm like, okay, that was ridiculous.
And for the old farts that are Packer fans, there's some significance of this weekend. It's throwback weekend.
Yeah, this is as throwback as it gets. So what do you guys think? Are you fans of the Navy jerseys? We've seen several of these Navy jerseys in the past, but the tan pants and the helmets are brown with an imprint of a leather helmet.
I actually like them. I think they're sharp. It's fun. It's definitely not making any mistake that this is a throwback uniform. Of course, that helmet does look a little bit ridiculous on a Guardian cap, but I'll take it. I've always liked the Navy uniforms. I really have. They're sharp. It's a color that really pops. It looks great in the fall. I also like the green ones the past couple of years from the 50s. I don't think the Packers and even the winter white has grown on me, where I hated it initially, but it looked really great on Sunday Night Football.
Well, that was because you were comparing it to the Steelers.
They looked like they were like Bumblebee the Transformer. That was not in a good way.
Look like some weird European soccer team, you know.
Yeah. Aussie rules football, something weird.
Yeah, something way off.
Not flattering on anybody.
I think we're kind of like proud parents who can look at any child and just absolutely love them no matter what, even if they aren't particularly a cute baby. As Packer fans, I can't think of any alternate uniform that they've come up with that I haven't liked.
Well, they haven't been super controversial in like some really garish color or weird patterns. I think people either like or hate the helmets this weekend. I personally like them because, hey, it's a look.
Yeah, I think this one comes the closest to what you just described because of the helmets. You know, that's definitely a little very different.
But I wonder how the helmets are going to look at it, man. The camera view from the distance, where, you know, it's going to look like leather helmets.
I will say this, and I've said this for years, I wish they had some sort of rule or suggestion that if a team is going to wear their home alternate jerseys, I wish that the opposing team would usually bring some sort of alternate away jersey. So that,
well, like the Packers they were both, did this past Sunday.
Well, yeah, well, that wasn't their throwback that they wore. That was their Blizzard one, but
it was to avoid yellow on yellow helmet.
There was a point, I want to say years, and I can't remember if that was like 94 or 95, where I think the Bears and the Packers both donned throwback uniforms, and I just thought that was the coolest thing. I think they did that for the NFL. I don't, what was it, Sese Centennial or something like that, 75 years, and they had the panels, remember, the Packers
had those. And then there were the color block uniforms from a couple years ago where it was like, it was very red Patriots, very green Jets. And I get this text from my brother. He's like, yeah, red, green, colorblind me can't tell the difference between either team right now.
Yeah. So it's going to be a great game. That'll take us to the end of the third quarter. We're going to call this a third win, especially for the helmets. And now let's get into our Hot Pockets. You are looking for one more hot take from your Cheesehead Radio co-host. You've come to the right place. We're going to get up on our soapbox and give you one last reflection on your Green Bay Packers. Jersey Isle, as always, we will start with you.
Well, part of me wants to rant about the continual inconsistency of the Packers team, but I'm pretty sure I've done that before. A good half here, a good half there is just their identity right now. The important thing is they keep winning. In fact, the only reason they're not undefeated is because of two blocked tick kicks. But I've ranted about the special teams before also. So let me turn this around and just say how excited I am for the return of Christian Watson. In both receiving and downfield blocking, Watson significantly impacted this game in only his first game back after an incredibly fast recovery from that ACL injury. Jordan Love looks very comfortable throwing to him, as if he knows he can count on Watson to run his route correctly and be where he's supposed to be. That was the main thing Aaron Rodgers wanted from his receivers, and Love, I'm sure, was certainly influenced by that. The decision to extend Watson for another year, despite him being injured, is looking like yet another brilliant move by Goody. And that is my Hot
Pockets. Did you ever figure out your love language? You know, the quiz where you say you prefer quality time or words of affirmation. You might say that the Hall of Fame quarterbacks for the Packers also have their own love language on the field. Not so long ago, we had the fiercely competitive, championship belt-donning Aaron Rodgers, he of the icy glare and a chip on his shoulder. Before that, we had the gregarious and gritty Brett Favre, who threw rocket balls and loved to celebrate touchdowns like he was still 10 years old. But long before that, we had the classy Bart Starr, a gentleman who was deferential to his head coach, composed in the huddle, and jogged off the field after every touchdown like he'd been there before. We've spent so much time trying to figure out if Jordan Love is more like the genius of Aaron Rodgers or the grit of Brett Favre, when maybe the best comparison all along was always there. We always noted during his bad games that he never got down on himself. He didn't throw tantrums or when things went downhill. Now, as he's suddenly arriving on the NFL scene with a dominating performance over his friend and now rival Aaron Rodgers, you didn't see anything except cool, class, and calm from Jordan. He's quietly entering the conversation for MVP, and yet he's the same composed guy after a great game as he is after a terrible game. You see, this is what emotional intelligence looks like in a quarterback. And just like Bart Starr, it looks like maybe we found Jordan's love language, poise, and leadership. And that is my Hot
Pockets. A loss to the Browns, and the fans were already throwing in the towel. A tie in Dallas, and they were questioning Matt LaFleur's expiration date as a head coach. And two ugly wins after that, they moaned that the pack was not good enough. But with a statement win under Sunday Night Lights against that former guy, perhaps the fickle fan base needs to stop looking at the waiting for the bottom to fall out and start asking the right question. Is this a contender? Is this the contender team we've been waiting for? A healthy offensive line, a complete jumbo package on defense, with a lot of them not on the injury list, but rather on the field. A wide receiver room with another weapon in its arsenal, and perhaps the best tight end in the league. But last but not least, a quarterback that went from understudy to maturing leader. While this team is not perfect, it is healthier, and more importantly, a little more consistent. There's still room for improvement, and also more confident than it was a month ago. The tie in Dallas was not the death knell many had feared. Perhaps it was that fork in the road the Packers needed early on. Succumb to mediocrity or rise above. 8 weeks in and they lead the NFC. Strap in, kids. The second half of the season is going to be a wild and bumpy ride. The Packers right now are perhaps the team to beat. And that is my
Hot Pockets.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
All right, the Green Bay Packers sit atop the NFC North and the NFC seeding at the moment at 5-1-1 and host the 4-4 Carolina Panthers at Lambeau Field on Sunday for a noon kickoff. It's the most football time of the year in Wisconsin, and with throwback uniforms, it's a great time to be a Packer fan, but will it be a win? The Packers start out as a 12.5-point favorite in this game, which most fans have not taken as a sure thing as it's gone this season. How do we see this one turning out? Kelly, as always, we'll start with you.
I love autumn football. You're right. It's the most footballist time of the year. Chilly, but not painfully cold. It's a noon game, so where I'm seated, the sun will not blind me in the face until at the end of the fourth quarter. And I'll get to get my space badger on in the fifth quarter with the Badger Band. The Packers will be riding high, heading home. And I don't think the Panthers are going to stand a chance. I'm going to bet beyond the spread. Packers 38, Carolina 20.
The Packers only needed to play one half of a game of complimentary football to put away the Steelers last week. They'll probably only need to play one quarter of complimentary football to be able to put away the Panthers. But we'll keep it just close enough to feel uncomfortable because that's just the way it goes sometimes. Packers 26, Panthers 20.
Green Bay at home in the throwback uniforms can only mean one thing, a win for the Packers. Green Bay 27, Carolina 13.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio on our 17th season. Cheesehead Radio and all our Packer Talk podcasts can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And now you can watch two of our podcasts as live video streams on YouTube. Search for Packers Talk Network on YouTube and be sure to hit that subscribe button. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying Play Packers Talk Podcast. Finally, please follow at Packers Talk Net across all social media platforms. Remember to support our sponsor, Ticket King, for all your ticket needs. Just go to packerstalk.com/tickets for details. It's fall football in Green Bay this weekend, guys. That's a wrap. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Sixth win coming up.